Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice.
And a happy Monday to everyone. Today is January 16th, 2023. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Yeah, doing great, Chase. Good to have a couple more wins this week and definitely have a big slate coming up. So looking forward to seeing those.
Yes, the Pac-12 is getting very interesting. The whole country is actually kind of interesting. We're going to touch on that in a bit. But let's talk about USC first. We had big home games against the Mountain Schools, mainly because these are kind of almost like must-win games in a strange kind of way. I know it's early in the season to say that, but we went into these games with 5 losses already. We lost the last 2 games, both of the 2023 games. So we were looking for our first win in the calendar year 2023, obviously coming off that heartbreaking loss against UCLA. Both Mountain Schools went into those games ranked in the 40s and 50s in KenPom, and SC swept, which was great news. The Colorado game was a weird game where it almost looked like SC was going to blow Colorado out of the arena. Colorado was throwing the ball all over the place. Very odd. They ended up committing, I think, 22 turnovers, but they started the game just turning the ball over all the time. And then SC kind of got into this like very, very comfortable type of style where it was almost like they're sure we were going to win. We played 12 different players in the first half. I think the entire scholarship roster. We finally got to see Vince Uwachukwu, which was great news. But the game got close, as it's wont to do. Late down the line, SC was able to pull ahead the very end, win by 7. Utah game kind of started out back and forth. SC pulled a little bit ahead. Utah brought it back closer again. SC kind of pulled ahead again. And then really around the there was a point in the second half, right around the 12-minute mark or so, I believe, SC kind of took firm control of the game. A lot of that actually kind of coincided with Vincent kind of made his second appearance in the game. Had some really good defensive possession. Started to do some, for the first time seeing from him, we're about to talk about him. Started to see him do some things that were kind of interesting on the basketball court. He is so rusty at this point. The kid hadn't played any basketball, competitive basketball, since he had a cardiac arrest 6 months ago. So this is, to even have him out there is amazing. But he actually was kind of helpful in the as a catalyst in getting the kind of us locked in on defense. And from there, it's just, we played just great. I mean, last 10 minutes of the game, Utah only scored 7 points. I think, if I remember correctly, there was a point in the second half where Utah took a lead of 1 point at about the 17 and a half minute mark. They had 41 points. And then the last 17 and a half minutes of the game, they scored 15 points total the entire game, or the remainder of the game. So SC really stepped it up there at the end of that game, and it closed it out in a way that I didn't anticipate. I think offline I'd said, look, this is looking like another down-of-the-wire game. You disagreed. You thought, no, SC's going to take this by 10 or 15. You're right. I was wrong. So let's take the 2 games. What are your thoughts on each?
Yeah, so kind of – about as I expected this weekend. USC continues to outperform the Vegas and the KenPom projections. So this is actually dating back to that Auburn game. They've covered 6 of 7, I believe. Only non-covers that Washington State one where they couldn't hit a 3. Wazoo got really hot. The team had defensive lapses and guarding the 3-point line too. So that was part of it. But, Mullins is a great shooter and Justin Powell is too. Yeah, you saw like some similar issues in the Utah game towards the beginning of it. I like the way they guarded Mattson the whole time. I mean, even on the 3 that he hit like, he might have hit 2, but one of them was like a curl movement shot that was a really difficult shot. The way they guarded Worcester, I didn't really hate that either. He was 2 for 3 in the game, but he's not a shooter. One of his 3s was off the dribble. So some of these, you know, plays, you just have to tip your cap and say, okay, low percentage shot, they made it. So what? The two that were pretty atrocious defense were the Carlson ones in the first half, where they were playing that drop coverage and leaving Carlson like an uncontested in rhythm top of the arc three, and he hit two of them. Those were inexcusable, but they did make that adjustment to, I think they switched the screen on that play in the second half, and Carlson, they kind of slowed him down after the first few minutes of the second half there. So, yeah, two really good wins. That Colorado team and Utah, but I think Colorado even more so, they're really good defensively. They just, you know, under Boyle consistently, their defense has been ahead of their offense. They're really crisp in their rotations, good positionally, and they're just kind of tough on that end every year. So, you know, you can see that in the UCLA game when they played UCLA, they led for a lot of that game, and eventually they just started throwing the ball away, and that got away from them, but they were playing really good defense against the Bruins too. So, yeah, I think both these are quad two wins. But you know, they won by 7 and won by 15. So really like the overall effort. Agree with you, the D locked in the second half, and you know, when we make shots, we're really tough to beat. So, optimistic about the outlook, but certainly not surprised.
Yep. So few notes about the, you know, macro sense USC here. Sort out both games against Colorado and Utah came out and just did not rebound. Just did not rebound at all. By the end of the game against Colorado, Colorado ended up with 44 rebounds. We ended up with 29. So that was a pretty rough effort on the rebounding side.
Yes.
Came out against Utah, same thing, was like 7-1 out of the gate. But that game ended with us with 41 rebounds and Utah with only 29. Brandon Carlson, who last year was by far Utah's most important player, certainly this year, didn't play against UCLA because he had got a bug, and came out, scored 21 points in the first, 23 minutes of the game, and then was held scoreless the rest of the way. So we've really figured out how to guard him. This is all prelude to me saying we are now second in the country in 2-point field goal percentage defense, which is an impressive number, very impressive number. The only team ahead of us is UMass Lowell. do you know the most famous alumnus of UMass Lowell?
I do not. That's
Elvis Presley.
I had no idea. There you go.
How about that? 3-point defense, you know, that's one of these things where it seems like in the first half of games, it's really sticking it to us. We're not really closing out. We're leaving a lot of open looks. Much better in the second half. And that pattern has repeated itself against Washington State. Now, obviously, we weren't great in the second half against Washington State, but we weren't as bad as the first half. UCLA, we really came to play in the second half, really guarded that 3-point line. Colorado was not as strong in the first half against us from the 3-point line, but we did let Javon Ruff in there for a second look like Steph Curry. And obviously Utah hit, I think they hit all eight, I believe. Maybe only 7 of the 8 3-pointers in the first half. So we really kind of shut that down in the second half. It really just goes to show, if you take these second half defensive efforts against UCLA, against Colorado, and we can put together an entire game like that, gosh, our defense is really going to be tough. And that's even with some of the rebounding issues. I mean, we're still a very poor rebounding team, one of the worst rebounding teams in the country.
Yes.
You know, hopefully, maybe that can improve over some time here. I guess before we move on, do you have any thoughts on just those numbers, you know, the 2-point field goal percentage defense, guarding the three, things like that?
Yeah, so, you know, and this can lead to a whole different conversation on how random 3-point defense is. And kind of my sense is there's a lot of randomness to it and some of it you can control. So I kind of look at it more on a possession by possession basis, like, okay, did they play good defense on that possession, and kind of just try to eye test it. I watched some games earlier today, and the Villanova Georgetown game, which was surprisingly close, and Villanova pulled it out at home. But that team is just atrocious at guarding the three-point line. I mean, you could get an uncontested three against Villanova basically every single possession. And a lot of it is they're just slow. They have just this kind of, you know, they're skilled offensively, but their personnel, they're just not athletic, and they just don't contest shots. And I felt the same way watching Arizona in that Oregon game. I mean, Oregon moved the ball and they could get a wide open three against Arizona really every possession because of how unathletic Arizona's guards are. I don't think that's the case with us. Like, I think our guards are, you know, especially Kobe and even Boogie to an extent, are more athletic and can contest shots. So I think you're going to see some mean regression on that stat. I think, you know, we're going to continue to get better in our three-point defense. And then even just looking at some of our opponents, right? Like, Utah right now is 10th in the country in three-point defense. And I thought we got a lot of, you know, open looks against them and had one of our better shooting games. And same with Washington going into that game. They're 26th in the country in three-point defense. And that was one of our better shooting games too against those guys. We were, let's see, I guess 5 of 14. So not great, but 36% above our season average. So, yeah, I think some of it's controllable, some isn't. But, you know, overall, I think I'm more okay with that stat than you are, I guess, generally speaking. And then the 2-point D, I mean, it's been elite. What can you say?
Yeah. Okay. So the other one thing I want to talk about was Vince finally on the court playing. I think right away going in, and certainly when he hit the court, my thoughts were, there are so, when you're so cold and you have not played and you're just walking onto a basketball court, and he's never played college basketball before either. And quite frankly, the year previously, you know, he had played at two different schools or two different institutions with Montverde, and then later where Montverde, he did not get a lot of offensive looks at all. They have a lot of scorers there, so they just wouldn't really feed the post. And then later against SoCal Academy, where he did get more looks, but he didn't, you know, he didn't play a ton of games for them. So he hasn't really played a ton of basketball the last couple of years. So I already anticipate, gosh, this guy is going to be rusty as all you can imagine. And, you know, there's just, you watch enough basketball, you realize there's just maybe like 12 things you can isolate on big man play. Like, where does he position himself on defense? Where does he engage defenders? Is he able to, how does he react to ball screens? How does he, what offense does he, can he catch the passes? Can he position himself properly? Does he know when to call for the ball and when not to call for the ball? Does he know where the rim is compared to where he's lined up? I mean, there's a thousand of these things. And, you know, he's just, you know, it's like, it's for him, it's going to, a lot of this stuff is going to be new. And of course it looked like it very much so against Colorado. And for the most part, again, in the first half against Utah, in the second half against Utah, we started to see a little bit of like the thawing of that, of that coldness. And you saw I think he started to see the positioning he needed to be on a defense. I think he had one block or he deflected one ball. I don't know if he got credit for that, but he definitely changed some shots. He finally grabbed a rebound. That's another thing. You know, you're just not used to handling the ball, grabbing rebounds in traffic. So he got a rebound. So, and he got an assist. So, my hope is that this is a continual process. I'm hoping to. You actually play two games and then you have some practices with your teammates and you see kind of the level of intensity that you need to be at. And it's like an ongoing kind of like process of just kind of learning that. And then hopefully the feedback loop is a positive one for him. So I don't know, would you have any thoughts on what you saw from Vince?
Yeah, pretty much agree with everything you said. I mean, in the first game, he looked super robotic and mechanical and, you know, didn't really seem like he definitely wasn't quite right physically yet. And then in that second game, right, especially in the second half, I think what stood out to me is he looked a little bit less robotic and mechanical, but also he just knew where to be, right? Like, he was really good positionally in that game. And it felt like he was settling in and, you know, making an impact on defense, right? And I think with him, you just have to expect, you know, every game he'll get a little more comfortable and get a little bit better. But, you know, he looks big out there physically, right? I mean, he certainly looks the part, and, you know, he's a legit 7-footer, you know, maybe 7'1". So I think, you know, it might be, you know, too big of an ask for him to, you know, give us significant minutes against Arizona, you know, this coming Thursday. But, you know, even if he can give you, I don't know, 5-10 minutes against Ballo, just matching him with, you know, size and physicality, that can go a long way into keeping us in that game.
Yeah. One thing I have to say, I noticed too, a little bit of, it seemed to have lit a little bit of a spark with Kajani Wright. He played 9 minutes in that game against Utah. Probably the best I've seen him play in a few weeks. He was kind of settling into, I think, almost this kind of resolute, you know, just resolute that he wasn't going to be playing too much the rest of the season, wasn't really in the rotation. And, you know, he played pretty well against Utah. I have to give him credit. He still has issues with his hands, but he did grab a couple rebounds, or I guess he grabbed one rebound, got two blocks, his shot. So, he was D'ing up defenders. So I liked that, what I saw out of him. Do you have any opinion about the player rotations from the Colorado game?
You know, I listened to Andy's press conference on it, and, you know, I know he said that he thought they had a great week of practice, so he wanted to reward the players. I get it. It definitely didn't help in terms of, you know, trying to win the game per se. But yeah, I mean, they played all 12 guys, which was really interesting. I thought, like, in the second half, like once the starters, you know, got kind of more extended minutes and they shortened the bench in that second half, you saw kind of a better overall performance. But yeah, I mean, you know, the starting five, Reese, and then kind of one rotation big, at least to me, seems like the best kind of lineup situation moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although that's going to be tested this week, right? Because we've got the definitely the best big combo we're going to face this season. And there aren't too many times where you actually get two bigs on the court at the same time. Just a couple notes from the Utah game. Most of the players had a positive plus minus, according to Hooplands. Best offense when he was on the court actually goes to Malik Thomas, which tends to happen a lot. I think it's just he speeds up the game as well. I think what happens when he's in there. He was also the worst defense when he was in the game. He was in for about 23, 24 possessions, interestingly. Best defense, interesting. 15 possessions, Kajani Wright. So when he was guarding the post. So, yeah, interesting. Overall, best plus minus actually was, well, it was Kajani, but I'm just 15 possessions. So it actually was Reese just beating out Kobe. So Reese played pretty good defensive game. I mean, his offense is not all the way there yet, you can tell. But you could tell he's playing better defense. He's rebounding a little bit more. I think he's gotten more healthy. And then Kobe, you're just seeing kind of like almost on an, you can, it's, he's became, Kobe's becoming very predictable, which you can see from every game. He's going to get you assists, rebounds. He's going to get you steals. He's just going to be a big factor on the court.
Yeah. No, you need to play him. He's just, you know, he's the kind of guy. I mean, we've said it over and over again. He helps you win without scoring, and any scoring he gives you is a bonus, but he can score 0 points and still be a super positive impact guy on your team. Regarding Reese too, I think, you know, you made a really good point on his, you know, that with his defense, I don't know what was going on with him in that, on that Washington road trip, but, you know, he made so many defensive mistakes and had so many lapses, and, you know, last three games, UCLA, Colorado, Utah, he's been much, much better on that end. So really good to see.
Yeah. And I'll just pull up really quickly what his on court, off court, has been in those games. And yeah, when he's on the court, we're giving up 0.91 points per possession, which is really strong. Yeah. Not quite as good as Kobe, which is 0.8 points per possession, but still it's a strong number. Rest of the conference, because there were some really important games this last weekend. First we have Arizona State goes to Oregon, to Eugene, just blows out Oregon. Beats them by, essentially, it was a 20-point game, essentially the whole game. And I think the final margin was 17 points. Just kind of crushes the Ducks. And in this game, the Ducks were pretty much at full strength, I think. Cuisinart is back, and Barthelemy played 13 minutes in that game. So they had essentially their entire roster available and still are getting just crushed. They come back on Saturday, and they are the ones crushing Arizona, beaten by 20. Really wasn't too competitive a game. You could tell right away that Oregon had the athletes to figure it, kind of to tame Paulo, keep him in check. Don't let Tabellis go crazy. If you can do that and you can guard, you can do that without sacrificing guarding Arizona's guards, you stand a very strong chance of beating them. And Oregon had the personnel to do it, especially since their starting point power forward, whose name is escaping me right now, Guerrier, was actually able to guard Tabellis straight up quite a bit and do a pretty good job against him. But you know, they have Khalil Ware as well. So Ware only played 9 minutes in that game. So Dante was really effective against Paulo. So those two games were very interesting for Oregon. I don't think Oregon's slated to be in the tournament now, but it created kind of an interesting situation where now, even though Arizona State lost to Arizona kind of handily at home, they're ahead of Arizona in the rank and standings.
Right. I don't know what to make of that Oregon team. Like, I think, you know, they've always had the talent, right? And it's kind of hit or miss. I know Cuisinart, like, was crazy in that game against Arizona. He was hitting a bunch of threes. He even had that crazy play, I don't know if you saw it, where he was throwing, like, a half-court alley-oop and the ball, like, went in. You see that?
Yeah,
just amazing stuff. No, but Oregon, I thought their ball movement was just excellent in that game. You know, they very unselfish and, you know, showed a lot of Arizona's weaknesses on D. The other thing too that's kind of interesting is you've gotten a lot of up and down play out of Tabellis. Like, he might be the conference player of the year. I don't know. Like, it's probably going to be him or Hawkes, I'd imagine. But in their losses, right, against Oregon, 5-for-13 from two. Against Wazoo, 8-for-19 from two. Against Washington, in that close home win, they won that game by three and down at McHale. He was 7-of-17. And then in that Utah game where they got wiped by Utah and Salt Lake City, he was 6-for-15 from two. So he's got a lot of kind of stinkers in there. Even against ASU, he was 6-for-12. And that was, you know, they were able to win that game because ASU shot 3-of-27 from three, just horrific. But yeah, he's been a little more up and down than I'd imagined, given, you know, his really good play against like Tennessee and Indiana.
Yeah, and he's actually below 50% from 2-point range now, which is, I mean, it's not terrible considering his style of play, but it's a little bit surprising. You would have thought that he'd be, you know, more comfortably above 50% from two, and he's not. And
that's in conference play, right?
That's in conference play, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's definitely cooled off, right? Like you said, he's sub 48 from two in league. He's 58 on the season, so he's 10% worse from two in conference play. And same with Paulo. I mean, Paulo was 66% from two in the non-con, and now he's 56. So he's down about 10% from two-point range. And then they're shooting, right? So, you know, you look at Arizona, they've got the number seven off. This is really interesting. They've got the number seven offense in KenPom in the country, but then they have the number eight offense in the Pac-12 in conference play. So they've really cooled off. A lot of that is their three-point shooting because, you know, Chrisa is not playing, you know, Texas A&M Corpus Christi anymore and hitting all his threes. So you got, you know, him playing legit teams. Ramey's cooled way off. Larson has cooled way off. So who knows? Maybe they'll go, you know, 15 of 25 against us from downtown. You never know, but their guards really haven't played well of late.
Yeah, well, that's been their problem. It's just that, really, that when other teams are able to kind of somewhat, not fully, but somewhat neutralize Paolo and Tubelis, you know, just things, they have not hit their threes. And we'll see what they do against us, because, you know, that's going to be a big game, a lot of pressure on them. But yeah, Creases at 12 for 53. So we've seen us go against guys who are shooting very low percentages, and they get very hot against us. So you cannot like you can't just give Creases open looks. The good thing is, if you close out on him, he's somewhat limited offensively. I mean, he is now in 8 conference games, he's taken a grand total of 13 shots inside the 3-point arc. So, you know, he has not dedicated himself to beating you on inside the arc this season. We'll circle back a little bit, maybe at the end of the show, to those games. And then there's going to be Arizona State, which is tricky too. I guess maybe taking a broader look at the conference now, because people are starting to talk about bracketology, who's going to make the tournament, who's not. I think Jerry Palm at SC in. I think SC is really right on the bubble with a lot of this right now. I went and looked. SC's number at this moment, it seems to be changing constantly. It's number 58 in Ken Palm. Now, you had pointed out, I think, very astutely that even though SC, like last night, was at 59, they were closer to 49 than they were to 62. And that's because it's almost like a statistical tie all the way up and down KenPom, especially, you know, there's big chunks of these ratings that are, you know, it's hard. I mean, really tough to even, you know, get any separation at all. So separating, you know, like, for example, the TCU is, or let's take a better, Indiana is the number 27 ranked team in the country. Okay. If they played on a neutral against SC, Ken Palm would have them, I think, probably as a 3-point favorite. But if they played it at SC, Ken Palm would have them as probably SC by 1. And I think if they're playing on a neutral, I'm pretty sure that the money would be behind SC winning that game. That's just my guess. I'm not positive about that, but that's just the way, you know, it's a weird year for Ken Palm, and there are all these Pac-12 schools clustered. I mean, Colorado, we just beat number 48. They're like 10 spots ahead of us in Ken Palm with an 11-8 record. Arizona State's ahead of us, which is not surprising. They're 15-3, but Arizona State's behind Colorado. Arizona State, yeah. Won at Colorado. Some bizarre things there. Oregon is at 64. Not surprising, considering how they just had these wild swings. Utah's now dropped down to 66. But all five of those teams, I guess Arizona State's in the tournament right now. They have to be. They're 15-3. They bounced back from that loss to USF and just kind of have won every game since. So that's been huge for them. But the other teams, Colorado, USC, Oregon, Utah, I think potentially Washington State, which is right in there. I mean, Washington State is almost the exact same. Oregon, Washington State, and Utah are 64, 65, 66. Very, very close. I mean, very close to SC. You know, I don't think Washington State has a chance to get in because they have a losing record. But those other schools, if they got hot a little bit, they could all be potentially tournament teams, especially, you know, when you're looking at, you know, how many teams are going to come from the Pac-12. Is only going to be 3. I think the conference is actually pretty strong, had a pretty decent out of conference season. The ACC, which had a disastrous conference season, you know, some people projecting like 7 teams from the ACC just because of the weird kind of results so far in league play. So the Pac-12 is very kind of this chunk of teams that are just all bunched up. And then, you know, you could extend that to that nationally, where I think between Houston, Tennessee, UCLA, Alabama, Purdue, UConn, Kansas, and Texas, I think they've probably proven themselves the most, and they probably separated themselves the most. I guess Gonzaga is going to have an argument that they belong in there as well, even though they're playing these very tight games in the WCC. But the rest, I mean, everyone else after those teams, it's like a complete free-for-all. And, you know, who knows who's going to win any particular – you match up these teams on any court, I don't – you know, pick a winner. I mean, you just had Duke go to Clemson – and lose by 8 points, and it seems like no big deal. So what are your thoughts on all this kind of craziness?
Yeah. Just really quickly, you know, it's a little fun fact here. You know that Clemson is now 2 games clear in the ACC.
Yes. Yeah. That is. I mean, this is a team that lost to Loyola Chicago and lost to South Carolina, by the way.
Yeah. And what's great too is you've got a let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. You got a 5-way tie for second between Virginia, Miami, and then Pitt, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. All those schools are ahead of North Carolina, Duke, and NC State, which is just amazing. That the ACC is a crazy league this year.
And as a reminder, Syracuse lost to Colgate, Bryant College, St. John's. I mean,
exactly. And I think, you know, Pitt's taken some bad ones too. They lost to VCU and Vanderbilt. So, yeah, it's a really weird year, right? Like, you got Kentucky going out and dropping that quad four game to South Carolina, who's an atrocious team, and then coming out and beating Tennessee. You know, you kind of saw the makings of this a little bit. At least I thought so, just in that battle for Atlantis. Like, Tennessee looked like the best team in that tournament. They took out Kansas pretty handily in the final of that, but Kansas played like a really tight game against NC State. Dayton, who's like decent now, I think they're 52 in KenPom, they lost every game in that tournament. USC took Tennessee to overtime, so like they were right there. SC was really right there with Tennessee and Kansas and those teams. I thought they should have beat Wisconsin. That was a game they, you know, kind of threw away. But it's just really, really wild. And I think there's just so much uncertainty with the tournament right now. Like, Jerry Palm has SC as a 9 seed. I don't think they're in the tournament in the Lenardi bracket, but you got plenty of opportunities ahead here. You know, even within the Pac-12, right? I mean, SC takes UCLA to the wire at Pauley. And, you know, Arizona, who won that Maui Invitational, you know, we've discussed their recent struggles, especially on the defensive end. So, the opportunity is there. And what is kind of fun, right, is if you do make the tournament, you know, unless you're playing one of these top 7 or 8 teams, you're going to have a chance to win, right, and make a run a little bit. So,
yeah, absolutely.
That's really exciting. I guess the one other thing, you know, to touch on before we dive into the Arizona and the ASU stuff is kind of the Pac-12 tournament standings right now, or the conference standings. You've got ASU now 2 games clear of Arizona. SC's in there at 5-2, and they still have a lot of, like, you know, it's a tough stretch here, but it's not really like a tough schedule the rest of the way, because you still got those games against Cal and Stanford at home. You've got that Oregon State games, I guess, on the easier side. You still host the Washington schools, so, you know, plenty of games will be favored in too. So I don't know, do you have like any broad thoughts on the Pac-12? It seems like UCLA is the clear favorite, but just a lot of murkiness after that.
Yeah, UCLA is clear favorite. Saturday they're going to play Arizona, and they play Arizona State on Thursday. Now, I think UCLA has done pretty well against Bobby Hurley, if I remember correctly. Except for last year, I think they dropped that game. It was kind of a crazy result. They ended up dropping the game last year against Arizona State. 3 overtimes, yeah. I anticipate UCLA will win the conference. I don't think they're going to go 20-0 in conference play. But they're just, you know, kind of decidedly better, I think, than most of these teams. Everyone else, like, a step down. Like, the fact that Arizona State is kind of, like, standing very clearly in the standings at a second place with an entirely kind of Frankenstein roster, right, with these Cambridge brothers, with Frankie Collins transferring in from Michigan, Warren Washington coming over from Nevada as well. I mean, it's just it shows you just like it's like a certain level of strength, and it's hard to project beyond that. I'm almost left speechless because I don't know exactly how to analyze all of this stuff, but I certainly think the game in Tempe is going to be very difficult too, not just the game in the game in Tucson. So I don't know how we're going to come down the stretch here. I know that after that game, like Arizona State goes away and plays the Washington schools. Well, you think, okay, historically Arizona State is going to struggle. They just came away from a sweep up in Oregon. I mean, I don't even know what's left. Have they swept there before? I have no idea. I mean, so they've got away games in the Bay Area, which they could very well. They should sweep. But and then they end the season. They end the season like the way we've done in some past years, where the last three games are road games against Arizona, UCLA, and USC. So they might even be like second place, free and clear, going into those last three games, and then have a little bit of trouble there. We'll see how that hits them.
I think you got to feel like pretty good about SC's chances of getting a bye in the Pac-12 tournament at this point. Just given that both the Mountain schools got swept at the LA schools, I think that definitely helped. The other thing too is this game in Tempe is actually really huge, right? Because it's not only a quad one game, but if you win that, and let's say you lose to Arizona, but then beat ASU and UCLA goes down and sweeps them or something, right?
Yeah.
Then you're tied with ASU in the conference standings, and you still host them at Galen, right? So at that point, you probably think like, okay, SC has the advantage relative to ASU in terms of, conference standing seating, right? So it's a really crucial 3-game stretch. I guess we can dive in, to that, Chase. Any kind of initial thoughts right off the bat about these Arizona games?
Well, I'll just come out flat saying what concerns me most about playing Arizona is in the two losses that I've seen. Well, I shouldn't say that, because Washington State's a little bit of a different story. The loss to Utah really utilized Kiba Kieta. He played 19 minutes along with Carlson playing 25. So they were on the court quite a bit together. That really helped, against Arizona's two bigs a lot of that game. Against Washington State, now that was an interesting game. That's where Muhammad Gay just kind of went nuts, or 24 points, played really strong defense. He had 14 rebounds in that game. The rest of the personnel-wise, they just kind of went with, Rodman kind of at the four for most of that game. I mean, they were playing Powell and Mullins and Bamba. So, that's at least personnel wise, that's going to be more similar to what we're doing for the most part, where we're kind of playing these three swingmen at 2-3-4 it's a rotational four between Drew and Reese, Trey and Kobe. So, I guess that can work against Arizona, but Arizona seems to struggle the most when they've got that somebody's been kind of able to really D up Tubelis. And that's that's concern number one. Concern number two is the rebounding situation. Arizona is going to be a tougher rebounding team. They're, I think, nationally 47th in offensive rebounding percentage. We're obviously one of the worst teams in the country at offensive rebounding percentage. And the third concern is just, are we going to end up will we lose concentration? Will we end up giving a lot of these three, let these Arizona guys who've been cold all conference long regain some of the heat they had in non-conference play when they were playing teams, like for example, Cincinnati or something like that. So those are my biggest concerns. I on the offensive end, I think we'll do pretty well. We always have our struggles on offense because we tend to lose focus there too. And sometimes we turn the ball over when we shouldn't, and we don't grab offensive rebounds sometimes, although we did against Utah in the second half. So I have to give credit where credit is due. Arizona does not have a particularly daunting defense. They play pretty good defense inside the arc. But, we can look at, for example, how they've done so far in conference play on defense. And, they're really good at not fouling people. But like when it comes to guarding the rim, not so much. You know, they've guarded 3-point line just fine, but I think that might just be randomness. So, and they haven't forced a ton of turnovers, nor would I expect them to against us. So, I don't know. I think I have concerns about that game. Obviously, the crowd's going to be against us. It's going to be my first time at McHale watching a game. But it's a, I think this Arizona team is definitely beatable. We've seen that. I'm sure there's great tape on this. The question is, can we pull it off? And I just don't know.
Yeah, I think there are a few things we can do matchup-wise. This might sound crazy, but I would give Kobe a shot at Tubelis on the defensive ends.
I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you just saw how well he did against Da Silva, right? Like, especially like when Da Silva tried to take Kobe off the dribble, it was just game over, right? It wasn't going to work out. Late in that game, he had one drive where Kobe just like slapped the ball, it hit his Da Silva's knee and went out of bounds, and Da Silva ended that game with 7 turnovers. So even though like Tubelis is a more physical player, you know, both are like 6'9", 6'10", so Kobe's shown the ability to guard like up the lineup and be a legit tough matchup for fours, right? And a lot of Tubelis's game is he's just quicker than most fours who are like 6'10". That wouldn't be the case if you threw Kobe on him. I think he like Drew would have some problems with Tubelis, but Kobe would not. So we'll see how we decide to play that. I do think on the other end though, Tubelis just doesn't play any defense. So if you did have Drew at the four, Drew could give Tubelis a lot of issues off the dribble in terms of guarding that, that I'm not sure Kobe could. So we have a lot of things we can do. I think against these guys, again, like Tubelis, he's good, but he's pretty one-dimensional. Like all he does is drive left, right? And then matching Ballo's physicality, I think will be really key. Even like I was saying, if Vince can give us 5-10 minutes of just like a body, big body to throw at Ballo, I think that'd be really important. The matchup's probably going to come down to whether Kreisa can hit like NBA threes or not, right? And if he goes 0 for 5 from NBA 3, like we'll have a shot. And if he hits a few and, pumps up the crowd, then we're probably going to lose full down.
How much do you think their struggles, Arizona's struggles, and you look, I mean, they're now last in conference play only, last in the conference in effective field goal percentage offense, which is just remarkable, right? I mean, I think they were number one in the country at one point in total in KenPom offense, right? Do you think there might be something? I mean, for the Washington State loss, they played that really tough game against Washington, which they were able to come back and win. And then before that, the Arizona State game, they were ahead very early in that game by like 18 points, and then they got close. I mean, they were able to Arizona State just petered out, but. Do you think there's a part of this where, I mean, if you're just looking their last, they scored 69 against Arizona State, 70 against Washington, 61 against Washington State, 86 against Oregon State, and 68 against Oregon. Now, those are not for USC, that those would not be bad numbers, but for a team like Arizona, which was scoring consistently in the 80s, high 80s, hundreds earlier in the season, that's a big difference. Is it possible that these players have gotten in their head that they might not be as good as they thought they were?
I think maybe. And look, like maybe they're just not that good, right? Like it was really funny. I was reading like some articles earlier in the season about how Kirk Reese is an NBA draft prospect, right? But like, let's look at this guy's career, right? I mean, last year when he was getting a lot of hype, right? There was this big narrative around Arizona, like the downfall for Arizona could be that Kerr Kreisa is not healthy in the NCAA tournament, right? And it was so ridiculous. I mean, Kerr Kreisa last year shot 83 threes against quad one competition, and he made under 22% of his threes. And then this year against quad one competition, he's up at 25% from three, 23% in conference play. Like he's not that good of a shooter. I mean, he's like a good foul shooter, right? So like if he flops and gets the call, then he'll knock those down. But he's taken these like, threes, well, oftentimes well beyond the arc. And he's making pretty much one out of four, right? And if he's making one out of four, that's a win for the defense overall. So I don't think like he's a pro or anything like that. And then, you know, to Bellis, I think he's, you know, I think he's good. But again, like he's had his issues against quad one teams. Like last year, 45% from inside the arc against quad one teams. This year, he's starting to slow down as well, you know, with the sub 48 from two in conference play for two Bellis. So, you know, a lot of their KenPom and their stats are inflated because, yeah, I mean, they dropped 117 on Nicholls State, 75 on Southern, 104 on Utah Tech. They were good against Cincinnati. But then, like, they scored 99 on A&M Corpus Christi. They scored 85 on Montana State. They scored 93 on Morgan State, right? So 86 against Oregon State, who's, you know, pretty much a mid-major team. So there's a lot of, you know, padding their stats against the crap competition thing going on, I think, with these guys. And then you just look at the bigger picture with, okay, they had Dalen Terry, Christian Coloco, and Ben Matherin, who were all, you know, in NBA rotation. Like, I guess Terry and Matherin were first round picks. Matherin's having a great year. Coloco's having a pretty good year. And Terry, he might be up and down in the G League, but still a first round pick. So those were their NBA guys. The guys they have right now are not NBA guys. So if you put better athletes on them defensively, they're going to struggle a little bit more. So you're seeing that, I think, on both sides of the ball with them. And yeah, I think it's showing through now. They were able to get through that Maui Invitational with these really tight wins, and good for them. But I think these flaws have kind of always been there, but they were able to kind of mask it against bad teams.
What do we think about Arizona State here? Because, I mean, they have really pulled off some really, you know, impressive play. Four wins in a row now. We're up this Saturday game. It's very important, as you highlighted. Just looking really briefly, kind of his overall conference play for their guys. You know, Desmond Cambridge has shot about 36% from three in conference play. They're not like super great three-point shooter. DJ Horn's actually kind of been off. They play pretty good defense overall. They're more, you know, inside team. You know, Cambridge is better. Collins actually shooting surprisingly well from inside the arc, near 53%. Devin Cambridge is shooting around 71%. So they're kind of like they're very kind of different Bobby Hurley type team, more scrappy, I think, and fundamentally sound and trying to basically just win games more around the rim, rather than just wasting crazy shots.
Yeah, I think that's right. They're tough. I mean, they, you know, they almost lost that game up to in Corvallis to Oregon State. They didn't play great down the stretch. But I do think their shot selection is better this year than it has been in the past with some of those guards. You just jack everything. You know, they still have a few issues with that from time to time, but they're good defensively. They're, you know, tough around the rim. They can block shots. They're pretty long. And, you know, I just think the Cambridge brothers are better players than like Marion Jackson or some of the guys that have come through that program in recent years. So yeah, it's going to be a challenge. Warren Washington has kind of been just money for them. Pretty good on the glass, good rim protector, and you know, efficient when he shoots the ball. So he's been good, legit 7-footer there. So yeah, I mean, with the way they play too, they're kind of a high variance team because they do, you know, have kind of that erratic style sometimes that leads to games like them beating Michigan by 25 or them beating or losing to San Francisco by 37. So there's some of that going on. But yeah, like they don't have, I think, any NBA guys on their team either. And, you know, I think our guys are pretty good too. So I don't know, like someone asked me and I wanted to see what you think about this. If you were guaranteed over the next three games, which is the Arizona games on the road and UCLA at home, to go 1-2, would you take it?
I knew you were going to ask that. I think the answer is no. Even though you do run a risk of going 0-3, I think the chances of going 2-1 are slightly higher than the chances of going 0-3.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I think it's pretty close.
The Gilly Galen issue still is going to be very interesting, right? Because I'm sure Mick has gone back and trying to figure out what happened in that second half, and is going to try to rectify that. And so there's going to be a lot of adjustments made there. So, and we saw a little bit of it just when we were doing the analysis, and I guess we'll talk about that game next week. But, you know, there were some mistakes made by UCLA on offense there that I'm sure Mick is going to be trying to address. But that being said, I do think that what's your answer to that question? Would you take the 1-2?
I think it's really close. I guess I would, but I don't feel great about it. Like, I think we could go 2-1 for sure. Right. I think just like statistically, like we're going to be the underdog in all three games. Right. At least like by the analytics. I don't know. I feel decent about ASU though. Like it's tough. Right. I don't know.
So I will tell you what just doing a quick math here on my calculator, yeah.
You know, I changed my mind. I'm going to go with no. I would not take it. I think I agree with you now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. So KenPom basically has it as a 37% chance we lose all three games.
Okay. 37, lose all three.
Which means, you know, that there's a 63% chance we do not lose all three.
Right.
Okay. Which includes the infinitesimal percentage that we win all three, which is, according to KenPom, 3% chance. So KenPom basically has it, you know, that most likely we're going to go 1-2.
Okay. So let me throw this at you. Because we had a similar thing kind of going last year, right? When we closed with Oregon, it was Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona, right? UCLA was at Pauley, Oregon was in Eugene, Arizona was at home. We were just discussing, like, of those three, like, which were the easiest and which were the hardest. So how would you, like, rank these three in terms of difficulty?
Arizona away, number one, toughest. Arizona State away, number two, toughest. UCLA at home, number three, toughest.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'd have it Arizona road, toughest. And then kind of like the other two, I think, are really tight. I think ASU road slightly easier, I guess. They've won a lot of close games. It's hard for me to totally buy in on them, even though they've been clearly better in conference play than Arizona has. Mm-hmm. I think Arizona's crowd's better, too. I think that's like a little bit of a factor. ASU's crowd's decent, but you know, like just being in both venues, I think you really like see the McHale effect, especially like if they get on a run, you know, they do a lot of transition. It can get tough there. And that's why they've had the great record over the years. Right. So,
yeah. A lot of numbers with SC and SC and Arizona State look very similar, by the way. If you just look at kind of like efficiencies on offense and defense, there's a lot of, a lot of similarity stuff there, you know. Just to give an example, in conference play, SC offense efficiency 105.8. That basically you're scoring 5.8% above average there, 100 possessions. Arizona State 103.5, so not a big discrepancy. Defensive efficiency, Arizona State 96.9, SC 97.1, so almost statistically tied. You taking out nationally all games, Arizona State 83rd overall in overall adjusted offense, SC 72nd, Arizona State actually better on defense, 34th overall adjusted defense, SC 45th. I'm guessing one of the reason must be on the adjusted defense, just must be the rebounding with Arizona State, right? So, yeah, that's the, although they're not a tremendous defensive rebounding team either, but we're just notably bad.
Yeah. Yep. So how would you, what do you want to throw percentages on these three? How are you feeling overall about each of them?
Oh gosh. I'll let you throw the percentages. I'll pass on that one.
Okay. I'll give it my best shot. So I'll say Arizona road, 35%. I'll say UCLA at home, 42.5%, and ASU road, 49%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
And we'll see. That might look really dumb, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Do we have anything else before we break for the week?
I think that's about it. So looking forward to McHale, seeing it in person.
I am very excited about McHale, and hopefully I'll be excited about our team's performance when we're there.
Yeah.
So I guess until next time, everyone, fight on.
Yeah, fight on.